Welcome to the Brain Trust Driving Change Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Bloomfield. And whether you're a leader, a coach, a salesperson, or even a parent, this podcast focuses on how to leverage the science of decision-making to help you become a more impactful communicator and a driving force for change. Welcome back to the Driving Change Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Bloomfield. And boy, do I have a really unique and inspirational guest for you today. This is going to be a little bit different than even some of the recent guests we've had on. Jason Lippert is the CEO, president and CEO of Lippert. And you might be thinking, why would you have the president and the CEO of this manufacturing company based in Indiana on the Driving Change Podcast? This doesn't equate sometimes. He's not a neuroscientist. He's not like some endurance athlete or some. You wouldn't believe what Jason's going to be able to share with you today that I think has the chance to transform the way you think, not just at work, but at home. Let me give you just a little bit of background on Jason. So he started his work out. He started working basically back in 1990 in college at Lippert and then came on board a little bit later. But listen to this. So he was promoted to COO pretty quickly, and then ultimately became CEO of Lippert Company subsidiary at age 30. And from there became CEO of LCI Industries in 2013. Now I'm going to give you his credibility, and yet I know you don't care because you want to know about his connectability in a minute. But this guy helped lead this company from, what was it, 800 employees to over 15,000 and $150 million in sales. What I'm about to say is not, I'm not misstating it, to over $5 billion in sales in really short order, less than a couple of decades. And the way he did it is what we're going to talk about today. He didn't do it by slashing and burning and cutting and driving people into the ground. He did it by leading one of the best cultures you're going to find in any workplace in anywhere in the world. So I want to unpack that with him today. Jason, welcome to the Driving Change Podcast. It's an honor to have you on today.
Jeff, thanks so much for having me on. I'm really excited for the conversation.
That's great. Well, I warned you in our pre-show that the first question is always, we need to get to know you a little bit, right? So take us all the way back into your origin story. Now, you know I'm a Buckeye in Ohio. And so if you had anything to do with anywhere in the state of Michigan, we can skip over some of that. But no, I'm just kidding. So take us a little bit back to your early days and what formed the way you are today and maybe who were some of those early influences in your life?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I strolled on memory lane. I'm definitely not a neuroscientist, as you pointed out before. So good to know starting off. But I grew up in central Michigan, just had a real small town. Grandfather had started the business, you know, in his 20s, just building metal roofs. So the business was in town. So my grandparents were in town. My mom and dad were there. And me and my brothers and sister grew up there. So real little small farm town, and went to high school there, left and went to college, went to Miami of Ohio. I graduated from Miami in 94 and moved right to Elkhart. My dad wanted me to, you know, jump in the business and help him out. And so he didn't throw me behind a desk. He threw me in the weld shop, and I welded for a couple of years. And it really, really turned out to be a huge benefit because I ended up staying close to the welding lines and starting up a product line around RV chassis because I really was comfortable around welding and the product and the people and the processes. So turned out to be the best thing he ever did for me. And then our company went public in 97. He ultimately left, and the public company was nice enough to let me take a shot at it at a pretty young age. And I had established with a team, you know, a vision to get into the RV business. And we grew product lines mainly through organic growth in the beginning. As you say, we went from 150 to 5 billion, but, you know, a lot of that was in the RV space. We eventually started acquiring companies over the last 20 years since I've been with the business. We've acquired over 75 businesses, you know, in the $15 to $100 million range for the most part. So we've added quite a few businesses that way, but we've grown organically just by expanding product lines. Customers loved what we were doing for them. And every time we did well with one product, they'd show us another product line or area that we could help them with. And we would just gladly jump in and try to figure it out. Recession came along, and we eventually said, hey, look, we got to get diversified out of the RV business. My grandfather started the business and dad in the manufactured housing business. I started the RV piece of it, but by 08, we were almost, 90% RV. We'd kind of flipped the, we were still, very focused on one industry. So we decided to get into some other businesses and got into some, global businesses in Europe, got into marine. We got into the aftermarkets for our core markets, got into some transportation and commercial vehicle component work. And eventually that's, takes us to where we are today. We're 15,000 strong. And while we did, me and my team did grow from 150 million to 5 billion over the course of 20 years. I had a lot of help, met a lot of great people here with the business over a long period of time. And it's a fantastic business. We're, we're in the Fortune 1000. We've got a public business with a board and shareholders that really support what we're doing. And it's been a good ride.
So when you look back on that evolution of the leadership development, I always love this story, the storyline of, so you grew up around a little bit of blue collar entrepreneurism, right? So you had a grandfather and a father. And when you think back to those days, even back in Michigan with your grandfather running that metal roofing business, what were some of the things you remember back to that you think maybe subconsciously are still part of who you are and part of your DNA as a leader? Is it the work ethic? Is it what is it, the way that your grandfather, your dad treated people? Like, what was kind of in there at an early stage that you remember recognizing?
Yeah, I mean, my grandfather was a hard charger. Very stern and hard. And so that was, one character, and he did whatever it took to make the business work, because he didn't have an education, never went to school, and kind of worked on the roof lines as a supervisor, and decided, if he found somebody with a little bit of money, he didn't have anything, that he could make the roofs himself. And that's how he got into business. So he just was a do whatever it takes kind of individual, and just always put 100% in. My dad, he was a good relationship and business developer. So I learned that piece from him. He's taught me the importance of relationships and really doing things the right way. And he had a strong work ethic also, but his strength was in just, developing relationships and developing business. So I learned that. I learned two valuable things from, both my grandpa and my dad.
Do you find there's the lessons learned generationally, and that's the big topic now, right? Is generational differences now that we've got four generations sometimes in the same workforce. When you think about that, our grandfathers, you and I are close to the same age. Our grandfathers were, they rub some dirt on it guys. Like, they're going to just grind it out. A lot of them didn't have college educations. Hard charging guys that are just going to get it done. And it's just the way it was. You got up, you took your lunch pail, and it didn't matter. You played hurt every day, right? That's just kind of how it was. And then our fathers came along, and some of them, they had some of those characteristics because they were raised in that environment, but they started to recognize a little bit more, I think, of that, I don't say balance, but the people side of this. But really, I think it started with our generation of recognizing, man, there's got to be an easier way to get the end result, because at the end of the day, if you've ruined every relationship in your life and you go home and it's hard and your family doesn't like it because you're always grinding and you're grinding them into the ground. What was that? Do you think it sounds like you took a little bit of that? How do you see that play out today generationally? You probably have multi-generations, I'm sure, in your workforce today. And do you still see a little bit of that? Do you have to deal with that as a culture?
Yeah, I mean, when I talk to the Gen Z team members that we've got around the business, they don't understand the rub some dirt on it concept. it's kind of foreign. But no, I mean, in every, God created every human being differently. So you got to be able to, adapt to, people bring different talents and experiences and, education and all that good stuff to the business. And you just got to figure out what you've got. So that you can optimize whatever it is that people are bringing to the business. And you can't do that without developing relationships and trust. And so, whether it's somebody in my seat or somebody in one of our leader seats elsewhere in the company, and we've got to get in and get to know, who we've got working for us, and then really engage them and make sure that they know that their charge is to, do as much as they can with the talents that they've been given and the opportunity we're going to give them. And that's what, I think is a great separator and competitive advantage, company to company. It's that. It's not quality, service, price. I mean, those things you all need to be good at. But if you can optimize the people that are coming into the business, that's your true competitive advantage, in my opinion.
Now, do you, when you think about your first major role, it could be the COO or your role, or it could be the CEO role. You were really young, considering, especially back then. Like, you just didn't get promoted in companies at 30 to CEO typically. Now you're probably on your third company because you know startup tech companies. These guys are 30; they've already sold three companies.
Yeah, right.
But you know, back then, it wasn't that common to see a 30-year-old CEO. Did you have any? Like, what was your dynamics back then psychologically? Did you feel a little bit like you had to prove yourself, or were there some, or would you tell us a little bit about that environment back then and what you learned through that maybe first 4 or 5 years of being in such a demanding leadership role at such a young age?
Yeah, I was, back at that time, I leaned more toward the grinding and the hard work and the work ethic. And, you know, I knew when I walked in that plant every morning, and I had to be one of the first ones in it. 4:30 in the morning, and you know, I couldn't come to work late and show up on the weld line, and you know, and people just say, well, it's the owner's son, and you know, he is who he is. So I made it a point to prove myself, you know, early on, and you know, outwork everybody I could, and put the work in and be, you know, first one in, last one out. And you know, that paid off, to at least pave the way to be able to, you know, when I did start a different part of the business, people at least had a little bit of respect and knew that I wasn't a slouch or a sloth. And, you know, they knew I was going to put the work in, and I wasn't afraid to get in and weld with the guys and gals and make product to meet deadlines and timelines and things like that, or develop new prototypes. I wouldn't just, you know, I'd never ask somebody to do something I wasn't willing to do. And that's really what allowed me to, you know, at least get the new business off the ground and really grow the business. And
where was the time period there? And we talked about this a little bit in the pre-show. I didn't catch the time period where you started to have a little bit of that epiphany of scratching your head and going, okay, there's got to be more to this. And as a leader, I want more. I want a little bit of a greater purpose. When did that start to happen for you?
Yeah. So that really didn't happen until about 2011. For the first period of my life, I mean, I learned a lot of lessons and I worked hard. I grounded out and kind of set the pace for, hey, look, this is what, you know, being a great team member here looks like. You got to work your tail off. And if we run over you, we're probably just going to keep going. You got to try to keep up. We're growing too fast to be able to, you know, sit back and, you know, help everybody off the ground once they get tired. That's just the way I ran the business for a long time. And I didn't have really a lot of good examples inside the factory, inside the manufacturing facility I remember when I walked through the shop floor my junior year on a night shift, my first welding assignment, people were swearing at each other and, you know, things didn't go well. People were yelling and screaming at each other, throwing welding rod and tape measures at each other and, you know, goofing around. And I mean, it was just, that's what I learned. I mean, they don't teach you that in school. And when you get into the workforce, you're just like, okay, I guess this is how it is. I got to adapt. And unfortunately, so many of us come into the workplace like that, whether it's a professional environment or whether it's a manufacturing, you know, facility, you see and you learn and you adapt. And then that's kind of, you know, what you take to the next, you know, promotion. And, you know, unfortunately I did that over, you know, a period of 10 years. Now we ran hard. We beat our competitors. We grew lightning fast, and you know, that kind of masked a lot of the other things that we were doing. But, you know, as I was telling you in the pre-talk, it was after about 15 years, and, you know, we had accomplished a ton. We had grown the business to about $1 billion, and, you know, we're getting all sorts of accolades around stock price and growth and our return to our investors and, you know, from the board, other leaders in the community, the leaders in our company. Everybody was high-fiving each other all the time. And, you know, I remember praying in my, you know, prayer life and just asking God, like, is this what the next 10 years is going to be? Is it going to be more, hey, growth and sales and revenues and profits and, you know, shareholder returns and stock price and all that good stuff? And, you know, the answer eventually came to me as I wrestled with that through a TED talk from Bob Chapman, who wrote the book called Everybody Matters. And he did a really famous TED talk called Truly Human Leadership. And I watched Truly Human Leadership. I remember watching it and a light bulb came on, and it was just a different way to do culture, where we really, you know, like I was talking earlier about, we try to, you know, develop relationships and trust with team members, treat them like human beings. Every human being that comes into work at our place every day, I mean, they've got sons and daughters or somebody else's son or daughter? Are we treating them with dignity and respect and really, you know, doing both, you know, working hard, but, you know, doing it in a way that's respectful and helpful to people and helping them grow and develop as a human being along the way, because we have them for 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week. So can't all be just about hard work and growth. And anyway, Truly Human Leadership was a light bulb moment. I eventually read Bob's book, and, you know, he started a culture back in the early 2000s in a manufacturing company that's, you know, about the same size as us today. So there's a lot of really good parallels, and helped me understand how do you apply and develop a meaningful, real culture that's healthy and that works in a business like a manufacturing business. So that was kind of the catalyst that kind of where I flipped and focused on, hey, look, we got to do both. We got to work on healthy culture and, you know, develop people, and we'll get more that way out of the business than just working people to the bone.
Did you find that you started to benefit from that personally as well in your own family life when you started to make that transition for others? What was the impact? Were you pretty good at balance? Like, you were a grinder, but you knew how to turn it off when you went home? Or was there a little bit of ripple effect sometimes at just how driven you had to be and how much stress you were under all the time? Were you pretty good at balancing that earlier? Or did that kind of evolve for you as well?
I think I was better than most, but make it sound like I had it all figured out. I mean, I definitely learned some things in the process, but the biggest epiphany for me was that as we put values on the wall and as we started holding people accountable to values, as I started making sure I was living up to the values, as people were looking at me on a regular basis, and, you know, we just didn't have values at the time. We didn't, until my culture light bulb went off, you know, that's when we went to the business with values, and we just started holding people accountable, and we started living the values and being consistent to the values and removing people from the business that just didn't want to feel like they had to do that. And then once people started, you know, we got 2 or 3 years and, you know, down the road with that, people said, you know what, I've worked for a lot of companies that have values on the wall. Very few of them does the leadership actually stay consistent with them. And I think I'm going to stay here over the long term. And, you know, I joke with everybody, I got a box of letters under my desk where after 10 years, people have sent me letters from all over the company and just, you know, just saying, hey, thanks. You know, the leadership here treats me so well. You know, we promote personal and professional growth plans across the business, all the way down to the front lines of our men and women that are making parts, you know, at our 100 factories, and, you know, men and women, you know, sending me stuff saying, hey, look, this leader just changed my life. The values and people living consistent with the values, I've never experienced that in business. And, you know, I'm a better mom. I'm a better dad at home. Hey, I've taken the leadership action plans and the personal and professional growth plans you have us do home to my kids. I just did a listening session this morning with our Alabama crew, and I had a story of a woman who said, hey, look, this has been so impactful to me. I took it home to my kids and had them do them, and my spouse is doing a plan. And it's like, that's the ripple impact culture can really have if we really stay consistent and apply it and really live values and just stay consistent there.
Yeah, that's so good. Man, I love that. And I think you and I talked about this before as well. As business leaders in the marketplace, I think our number one responsibility is to create such a powerful culture that it has that ripple effect in people's home and personal lives. And one of the things that we found when we start going into organizations and helping them, particularly with our coaching work, is it takes three layers of vision. You got to have a company vision. Every leader has to have a leader vision, but you have to understand the people's personal vision that you're leading. And if you can align those three visions together, that's where the magic happens. You can't just have you can't just understand people's vision. If it doesn't align, then to your point, they probably could go pursue that vision elsewhere.
Right.
But when you find those three things and find the alignment of it, that sounds like what you've created there is just exponential. And that's my question for you is, how do you convince the board and other leaders that, hey, the investment in development of everybody all the way down, though on the surface might look like it's going to be less productive because we're taking them out of their job for a minute, is actually going to be an accelerator?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's a couple things here that I get asked that question all the time, and the board used to ask that question often, but really, you know, the secret sauce is to a successful business is people, especially in manufacturing, is people staying around the business over the long term. So nobody ever argues with me that, you know, if we have 10 people in a work cell building windows, you know, if those 10 people are good and they're committed and they're coming in with passion and energy every day because they're just, they love working here. It's going to be a great productive team. If I got another team with people coming in and out, leaving all the time because they're just not satisfied with the leadership, or the leadership is bad, or they've got a bad boss, or the culture is just inconsistent, and there's people coming in and out of the works all the time, and you're constantly recruiting and training and hiring people, you can't get any momentum with that work cell. So, you know, which one would you want to have? Well, to get this work cell, I got to actually work on culture and have some resources dedicated to culture and leadership development and teach those leaders how to lead. So those people that work for that leader or work with that leader want to come back every day with passion and energy, ready to get things done. So when you explain it that way and you say, look, we need resources to do that, then, you know, people tend to make a little bit more sense out of it. I've got 30 people, you know, we established a culture department here. So one of the things we do a lot different than any other business out there is we've got a culture department. We've got 30 people in it. And we do leadership development coaching, especially for the frontline men and women. We've got 1,000 people at the manufacturing level of our organization leading about 14,000 people. Wow. So those 1,000 frontline leaders that are the first leader up from the shop floor, if they don't get how to lead well, I mean, just throwing the towel on culture because you're never going to have great leadership. So our focus on leadership development and culture development is with those frontline leaders that make up, you know, the monster influence over the larger population of our organization. So we've got leadership development people. We've got personal development people. We've got dream achievers that help with personal goals. We've got a philanthropy department. We've got a chaplain department. We've got a health and wellness department. So all those people, those 30, make up our culture and leadership development department. And they're specifically there to help grow and develop people. And I think that's a secret sauce for us.
Wait, I'm going to call time out a second because I know that someone's driving right now and they're heading into the office and they're an executive. I want to make sure they just caught that. Can you list off those departments again that you just said in order?
Yeah. So first off, we said, hey, look, you know, everybody says culture and leadership is the most culture strategy for breakfast. People quote Peter Drucker all the time. You know, it's the most important thing. But then yet, most of those people, 99% of those people, take that statement and lump it in the HR department, who already has one of the busiest plates in the organization, and their jobs and business is only getting more complex with all the issues that they have to deal with, especially in a public company. So what we did is we took culture and leadership development off their plate and created a department where we said, hey, look, we're going to focus we want to move the culture. We got to have resources dedicated. We can't just say it's everybody's job or everybody's going to play a part in it. Yeah, that's true. Everybody's got to participate and line up with the values. But we have a department dedicated to culture and leadership development. And in that department, you know, we've got leadership development coaches who are specifically dedicated to the frontline men and women that are leading that 14,000 people on the front lines. We've got personal development coaches because a lot of the reasons people, you know, aren't doing well at work is because they got personal issues and crisis that they're trying to deal with. And common business culture has taught people to check your bags at the door and get in and do your work and get home. Well, guess what? You can't separate from your personal life and leave it at the door. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But yet businesses ask their team members to do that all the time. So we've got people inside that can help people deal with real life problems, whether the financial crisis or personal, you know, health crisis. People are dealing with loss all over the place in all sorts of different ways. So we've got a philanthropy team that sets up serving events for all 100 of our facilities so that, you know, our general managers and our plant managers don't have to figure out how to set those things up and invite people to go do serving events. So we have 100 plants, and our philanthropy department helps all 100 coordinate, you know, 3 to 4 serving events a year. And we've got about 70% of our total work population participating in serving events since we started that 6 years ago. And our goal is just to get 100,000 hours a year of community service through our people at work. We've got a chaplain. We're getting ready to hire a second one. And then we've got a health and wellness department and a mobile medical crew that goes to the plants and, you know, allows people to get checked out and takes blood panels so we can help people take their next steps in health and wellness and all sorts of good stuff. So
it's incredible. Short. You just don't hear that anymore. And yet when you hear you describe it, you don't hear it anymore. You don't hear it ever. When I hear you describe it, it makes so much sense, but it requires some leadership courage to say, we're going to invest in this when the board sees that as, boy, that's a high expense that you're putting that much budget to one department that's just made up that nobody else has. Right. And yet we know that the highest expense line in a company is usually turnover.
Yeah.
And we also know that the reason people turn over, the number one reason stated year after year, is usually their direct manager. Mm-hmm. And so those thousand, you've figured out, you've cracked the code, right? Those thousand frontline managers are your culture warriors.
We have. And that's it in a nutshell. And I don't want to dissuade people from thinking, oh man, 30 people for a company, you know, whether you're 5 billion or 1 billion or 100 million, you know, we started with one person.
Yeah, it's proportional, right? It's proportional. Yeah,
so we started with one person. We said, let's see how this goes. And we saw so much impact from just teaching our frontline leaders, just our leader qualities in our business, what we require out of leaders and what good leadership looks like. And none of them had ever been taught before. I mean, I went to college. I never got a leadership course. So our men and women on the front line, some of them graduated from high school. Some of them didn't. We can't expect them to have had leadership courses. So, you know, I think it's on businesses because most people didn't get that in the past to just make sure that they've got the opportunity to learn and understand what good leadership looks like and what the expectation is and not just assume that, you know, they're going to figure it out.
That's fantastic. And at the end of the day, I'm sure that it's much easier going into the board now and showing like, here's the, it's probably when you're first starting out, it does look a little risky to some business leaders because, you know, they're putting out resources that they don't know if there's an ROI. Well, let me tell you, if you're listening out there, it's been proven time and time again, when you invest in your people this way, it inevitably always has a return on investment financially and performance and productivity. But to your point, in the bigger picture, I don't know a leader outside of, well, there's probably a few narcissistic gals that you don't want to ever really have a relationship with, but most of them, the longer they lead, the more they want to lean into purpose. And they recognize that their people are a path to purpose if they can help them achieve purpose in their own personal lives. Nobody really wants on their tombstone, you know, we increased EBITDA by 13% year over year for 12 years in a row. No one ever wants that on their tombstone, yet we tend to lead that way, don't we?
That's right. And I think that, you know, our goal is simply to have 15,000 servant leaders in this business with our people and have, you know, all 15,000 of our people have leadership action plans or personal and professional growth plans written down, you know, going to your purpose and meaning content or comment. So, you know, we got to help people get there. And when they do, they say things like, man, I want this for my family. I want this for my kids. They say, you know what, I'm going to help the team that I'm leading. I'm going to help them do this. And then, you know, they start, you know, growing personally and professionally, and all sorts of great things happen. We impact people in positive ways and the world starts to look a little bit better. I think there's a business cultural revolution at hand. I mean, you know, for the last two decades, there's been talk about it and the talk's been amping up and there's more people doing things and, you know, us putting people and resources in the culture and leadership development department isn't new. There's more companies doing it. There's not nearly enough, but I think over the coming decade, there'll be a lot more companies that do. And just start with one and watch the impact happen. And you'll say, we're not getting enough done with just one person. We need the second. And to your point, you get people saying, hey, look, this is my company. I'm staying here. You're going to have to kick me out of this place. And I'm retiring here. And man, when people come to work with that kind of thought process and energy, they become different, you know, different and more productive team members for the business.
That's just fantastic. And the other thing you're doing, I think that for leaders who are trying this out or feeling pulled to try this out, what tends to happen is in companies, regardless of the size, is they let the frontline leaders, they say, hey, we want to have a great culture. We want to have a culture of leadership and all that. But then they don't give them any rails to run on. So then what happens is if you've got, you know, 100 frontline leaders and you've told them all, here's the vision of the company, they go interpret that on their own and they go try to develop on their own. And they go try to, so then you end up with 100 different variations of culture.
Right.
And so what you've done is you said, hey, let's establish a single point of culture, and then let's develop people in that direction, but with their own unique gifts.
Right. And then that's where the values come in. And that's where I think most companies just miss it. You know, just a box to check for most companies. Hey, do you have values? Yes, we have values. See, they're up there on the wall. The whole values journey is how can you get people to consistently, you know, lock in, believe in them, and then live them out day in and day out. And then at the same time, make sure that you're holding people accountable that aren't lining up with the values day in and day out. Because the minute people see somebody not lining up and they get away with it, they say, well, values don't mean anything. Yeah, and then the so whole true. Culture opportunity goes out the window. So, you know, what I've tried to convince a lot of leaders that are really trying to figure out what they're so far down the road, they're trying to do all these fun things for team members and, you know, engagement activities and all that stuff is great. But if people aren't doing the basic, here's the values, we're following the values, you know, it's not an option not to line up with the values and not be consistent with the values. Cause if you don't, you just can't be here. If you don't do that, then the rest of the stuff is just kind of, you know, it's not really going to have much meaning or impact.
Yeah. And then defining, it sounds like what you got a good job of is saying, here's the values, here's how we define them, but here's actually what they look like.
Yeah.
And here's what they look like when they're being enacted. And here's what they look like when the law's being broken of this value. Right. And so we want, and when leaders step into that gap and their team feel like they can hold their leader accountable.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Right. When you have that kind of vulnerability and transparency and authenticity, it's amazing. So yeah. What do you want? Last couple questions here. What do you want your, I hate to use the word legacy to be, because I think we've established what your legacy is, and I think it's tremendous. I'm curious, like, what do you want the next chapter to look like for you? You've accomplished so much professionally, and as a result, even some personal stuff with development of people. What's that next chapter look like for you?
Well, look, I just enjoy, you know, I enjoy helping shepherd, you know, people around the business that are kind of waking up to the power the culture can have and the impact it can have on people's lives and ultimately our team members' families' lives. And that's really important. I don't get sick of that. I could do that forever. I ultimately want to, you know, watch some of our other leaders step up and own that and sit back and watch and still help out. But, you know, the real benefit, when we started this culture journey 10 years ago, you know, we said, hey, look, we had 7,000 people. We had all this impact we can have just with the people that we have here and then ultimately their families and the people they touch. But the real magic and legacy for me is just going to be all the businesses that have watched us, you know, locally and then, you know, through social media, watched what we've done and then asked questions and said, hey, how do I do some of what you've done in our organization? And then we get the chance to one of the other, you know, culture at resources we have is a leadership academy. So we have, you know, an external facing academy that because we've been so inundated with calls and I'm getting calls all the time, I've got somebody that does nothing but, you know, takes our culture playbook that we have written down and sits down with a business that's interested in really growing and learning in culture and going through it with them just to say, look, here's the things that we did. They might not all be right for you, but they're going to move the needle and you can take any flavor of them you want, but these are the things you need to do. So as businesses have reached out to us locally and all over the country, and we've helped people start taking culture and leadership development steps, which ultimately impact their team members and their team members' families in a positive way, we know it will. That's like the greatest impact and legacy anyone could ever ask for. Like you said, nobody's going to write, you know, your record number of windows or chassis or EBITDA or sales on your tombstone. You're gonna leave this world and remember who you impact and how positively impacted people's lives. And that's what culture is all about. It's that opportunity to impact and influence people's lives as leaders. And, you know, we can choose to lean in and do some of the tough stuff and have that result, or we can just kind of sit back and be comfortable and, you know, not do much.
So did you just say, I want to make sure I got this right as we close. Did you just say that a business leader, owner, executive that's out there right now could contact you guys and actually learn the Lippert culture playbook from you?
Yes. Yeah. So let me clarify. I don't have like tons of social media. I have LinkedIn and that's it. And people reach out to me on LinkedIn all the time and I've never not responded and connected people with those resources or said, hey, look, let's get on the phone for 20 minutes and chat. Let's talk about where you're at, maybe what some next steps are. To me, that's what fills me up. So yeah, if you can find me on if you find me on LinkedIn, I'll respond. And, you know, one of the things I want to leave this world with is, you know, helping businesses, you know, figure out what Bob helped us figure out. Bob awesome. Chapman, Barry Wimler, he helped us figure it out. You know, I know we can help other people figure it out. So, and then hopefully they help other, you know, people figure it out and so on and so forth. And the ripple just gets really, really huge and ultimately has a, you know, a real positive impact in this world. That's what, you know, we say around here, business can be a force for good in this world. And by that, we mean you know, if we truly treat people like human beings in the business and help them realize that living with values and purpose and meaning and having a personal professional growth plan can impact their lives and their families' lives, that's good. You know, if we can help other businesses realize the same thing and turn from, you know, kind of, you know, crappy or average or mediocre cultures to really great cultures that impact people in the way I just described, that's good. But business can be a force for good, and it's what the world needs right now. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the word out and helping people realize that we've been doing culture wrong, is businesses in general the last, you know, handful of years. 88% of the people in this country feel like they work for a company that doesn't care about them. And that's a direct result of poor culture.
Wow. Amazing. Well, man, I admire what you've done, what you're building, what you've built, just the lives you're impacting. I'm jealous in a good way because I want to have the same impact. I think we are, but not quite to the scale you are an individual company. And I want everyone listening out there to take heart to what you said and either challenge the status quo inside your company, go to your leaders and say, hey, I want this for us. Or if you're in a position of leadership, reach out to Jason on LinkedIn and connect with him. I'm sure he'll pass over some of the resources to you and start to take that first step into creating a culture that's going to leave a lasting impact on your people. So Jason, this was honestly, I expected a high bar for you on this, but I'm excited. I'm pumped up. Listen to me. I'm ready to go out and we're going to have a culture meeting. Team, we're going to have a culture meeting later. So thank you for joining us.
Jeff, it was awesome being here. I really appreciate you thinking enough to ask me to come on and have a conversation. So
it was great. It was our pleasure. We'll have you on again soon.
All right, Jeff.
You've got questions. We've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.